Joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net, I am Roy, AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Malen, KG2C, will be your co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages. Also, we offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club website. The link can be found on the front page of our website in orange colored type, but if you would like a simple URL to find it, you can just type puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to either stream.kc2rc.com or, if that's down, live.kc2rc.com. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each month. All of this information can also be found on our club website, www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow AMs join our club. And by the way, an application is still available on our website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your name, your call sign, and whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try my best to provide an answer, and Malen KG2C will join in. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer knowledge or experience to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know here or use our email address, tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Malen KG2C. Good evening, Malen.
Good morning, everyone else on the net. This is Malen, Kilo Golf 2 Charlie. Do you hear me okay? Because I'm only using 5 watts right now.
It's on the tinny side, it's a lot of treble, not much bass.
Well, that's probably just the radio and the microphone I'm using, but I'm making it in without too much noise, I hope.
You're quite intelligible on this radio.
Thank you, Roy. Well, back to you from Kilo Golf 2 Charlie.
Very well. So again, this is AC2GS Roy here. This is the technical net for the Kings County Radio Club. And if anyone has any questions or comments to make of a technical nature, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Roy, this is Gene, Q Yankee 2, Michael Yankee. I got a question.
Gene, you're on the list. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for any questions or comments tonight? Okay, Gene, we'll start with you, and hopefully people will come by and have their questions or comments as well. So what's your question for tonight, Gene?
Please, I'm interested into building a DMR hotspot. I ordered all of my parts, and right now I'm thinking about ordering my USB battery pack. I don't know how many milliamps should I order, 4,000, 10,000, 20,000.
Are there any specs listed with any of the devices that you're using about what the power drain might be? I mean, all things being equal, probably the more capacity, the better it is, the longer you can use it without the need for recharging.
But I don't want to get a pack that I could use for 2 weeks that I don't plan to use for 2 weeks. That's it, because it's heavy. So the idea is being portable.
I realize. Once again, the most important thing is looking around, and I'm sure they list how many milliamps these devices use, and or you could just plug them in if you have a voltometer and check out how many milliamps current they use, and then do the quick math and maybe multiply by two or three just to be on the safe side, and you'd come up with a good range. I mean, offhand, I'm not quite sure how many milliamps these types of units draw. I think it's highly dependent upon the circuit design and which of the Raspberry Pi modules are used. Maybe Malen has more specific knowledge about the current requirements of hotspots.
Well, I haven't looked at it, but they are powered through USB, and I haven't really tried to break out a USB cable into pieces to measure it. Otherwise, I have the meters to measure current like that, because I use one meter like that for my mobile radio, which is connected to the battery. But it wouldn't just matter which Raspberry Pi you have, which you mentioned, because you could use the 3 or the 0, which would have, I'm guessing, very different power requirements, but also the load, because those hotspots can use several modes, and I guess it depends how much activity there is, also it would vary. Although, I would guess if he's looking to use it for several weeks, most of the time probably will be on standby, so you could mostly use the standby to get an estimate. You would need to break out the USB cable, probably. I haven't looked at a Raspberry Pi. Maybe you could power it through some of the pins, and then it will be a little easier to measure. I need to look at the diagram and see. Because if you could power it from the pins, then it will be the easiest way to measure.
Comments? Away. Good evening, gentlemen. This is AC2, AE, Joe in Gravesend, Brooklyn, New York. And Gene, I just might have some information for you. Malen is partially right. Depending on which Raspberry Pi you're using depends on how many milliamps is being drawn. For the Pi 0W at standby, it draws 150 milliamps. In full transmission, it draws 650 milliamps. On the Raspberry Pi 3B Plus, in full transmission with a zoom spot or a duplexer on it, it will draw 1,250 milliamps. And at standby, it will draw 450 milliamps. And the batteries you can get, my suggestion is to just go online, go on Amazon, pretty much depending on how long you want it to last, how you want to hook it up, the aesthetics of the battery and stuff. Mitch and myself have several different types of batteries. If you want to look at some of the batteries that I have, I could take some snapshots and put them up for you and show you. I've got thin ones, I've got thick ones, I've got solar-powered ones. I've got homemade ones that Mitch is just now venturing into. And what else? Then there's even little ones that'll work. It all depends on how long you want to use the unit. Alpha Charlie 2 Alpha Echo, back over to net control.
Thank you very much, Joe. Let me see if I have it. Thank you very much, Joe. Probably the most important ingredient, rather than the dimensions, which are useful, is the capacity. The average USB type of on-the-go for a phone or something tends to be around 12,000 milliamp hours, from my recollection. So what I might suggest, there's a whole bunch of different ways of dealing with this. You could either use a volt ohm meter on the power pins of your USB connection, or very often they sell, and I bought one, a USB connector that gives you voltage current readings of what's being drawn through the USB, so that would be a very useful toy to have. And you could try out initially some USB power battery storage method that you already own. Like I said, I own a 12,000 milliamp hour USB storage device, and see how long it gets you, and then multiply the capacity from that basis. There's a lot of different ways to go around this and figuring things out.
Well, I forgot. I do have USB, one of those USB current reads, milliamp readers. I have so many toys, I forgot if I had that.
Now, that would be incredibly useful. You plug it in line with your setup, the way you're going to take it out, and you put it through the standby, you put it through the receive, you put it through the transmit, and you get an excellent idea of what kind of power outages your particular devices are. And again, if you happen to just have a 12,000 milliamp hour USB battery supply, you might want to just experiment, plug it in, see how long it takes to drain it out, and then, you know, come up with a multiple of milliamp hours that work for you.
Good idea. Thank you. This is Gene Q Yankee 2, Michael Yankee. And Joe, thanks for the milliamp readings.
No comment?
Great a comment, Joe.
I know for first-hand use that the Raspberry Pi Zero Ws with the wireless, they're the smaller of the Raspberry Pis. They're okay on 3.7 volts to 5 volts. But the Raspberry Pi 3B Plus, they're very finicky, and they definitely like to see 5 volts. I had to return a couple of charges that claimed that they were 5 volts, and because they were just dipping below that 4.5, it was enough to power other units, charge cell phones, and so forth. But the Raspberry Pi, it likes to see the voltage, and it needs the amperage. So you want to get something that's, I believe it's a 2-amp, well, no. In the draw on that, if you're not using it as a computer, is like, what would I say it was? It's 1250 and 450. So you really don't have to worry much about the milliamps so much at that point, but you definitely want to see a 5-volt source on it. If you give me a second, I could actually get the company where I got the power supplies from. N2RGA and myself got them from the same company.
Sure, Joe, and also if you could read the power capacity in amp hours or milliamp hours, that would be useful for Gene as well.
Double Joe. Comment?
Gene.
Thank Mitch for supplying me with the Raspberry Zero that he gave me the other day. Thank you, Mitch.
We have a whole bunch of very generous club members that we all should be appreciative. Joe and Mitch for all the time and effort they put in maintaining the repeater. Mitch giving you the Raspberry Pi. Bob, one of our new VE team members, who volunteered to donate a FTM 400DR so that Mitch can once again stream the digital and analog output of the club's repeater on the internet, and all the people who are so generous with the generator fund that supplied us with more than enough money to buy a very nice generator, which we will hopefully be using on events for years to come. Transmitting digitally.
That was me. N2RGA comment. GA comment.
Yes, Mitch, please comment.
Oh, sorry. I didn't hear you. The answer to that question is North Panda. I sent you the link, Gene. It's the Raspberry Pi Model B Plus power supply. It's a very good power supply. I have several of them. Well, not several of them. Three or four of them laying around. My Raspberry Pis. You're welcome anytime. If you need any help with it, don't hesitate. Don't hesitate to let me know, and we'll get you set up. Back to night control.
Hey, by the way, Mitch, is this a battery storage power supply, or is this a AC plug-in power supply?
AC plug-in power supply. It's sold for the Raspberry Pis, all of them. And his question on the batteries, I would go with the 18650 laptop batteries, or you could buy them online separately. You could buy brand new ones. They all range in prices from $5 to $10 each.
Also, there's a power pack that I've been using. It's called Tomo, T-O-M-O. It uses four 18650 batteries. It's an excellent battery pack. You need to supply your own batteries. You use the 18650s. And it lasts. So far, I've been using it 3 or 4 days on and off, like for an hour or two, maybe a day. And it's still on full charge. I haven't gone as far as leaving it on all day and see how long it'll last, but I'm pretty sure it'll last a while. It's an excellent battery pack holder. Then you get, let me let it reset. Then you get the cheap 3 port-hour Chinese battery packs that hold 18650s, I think 7 or 8 of them, depending on the one you get. Then you can make your own. I have a battery pack here that I made that has 18650s with a circuit board charger that I taped to the side of it, and it charges the 3.7 volts in parallel, and it has a 5-volt output. And I mean, there's all different options. If you want me to send you the link to the Tomo, when I will, just let me know. Back to that control. This was N2RGA.
Very good, Mitch. Gene, do you want to respond?
Mitch, please send me a link, because I've been looking at eBay. They have tons of different cases, and they range from 4 cells to 6 cells, 7 cells, 8 cells, and there's a lot to look at. I'm just curious to see, because I was reading about it. Some of them claim it's too heavy to carry around. Yeah, I'm just curious to see what size I can get away with not getting too heavy.
Comment?
Joe, please give us your comment.
Yeah, I think since you're a beginner with the hotspots, I think you're better off going with one that's already pre-built. Mitch, show him the, if you don't mind, if you can email him the one like I have, the... oh God, the solar one that charges by solar. That one is 5,500 milliamps, and it pretty much runs all day. It just keeps going. I haven't killed it yet. But yeah, if you're into like doing your own projects and stuff, then definitely go the way that Mitch is suggesting to you with the what is it, the 18650s. You build your own projects, you get a little more satisfaction out of it. But if you're not that handy with a soldering iron and stuff like that, then definitely go with one of the pre-built ones. I went on Amazon for a solar battery pack, and they were about $15 to $20 a piece. I happened to get two of them for $30. So you might find a deal like that out there as well.
Yes, Mitch, please comment.
The battery pack that I sent him, and check your email, Gene, is not a, one that you have to build. It's pre-built, and you slip the cover off, you put four 18650 cells in there, and you charge it, you're good to go. Back to net control.
Very good. Thanks, Mitch. Thanks, Joe. Gene, you know, there are a lot of options as far as 5-volt USB charging storage devices. You'll probably see many, many, many more listed both on Amazon and eBay and what have you. You know, you just have to look for something that has reasonably good quality so you don't get a voltage drop below 5 volts and find something with the milliamp hour capacity that suits your duration versus weight type of compromises, and the world will be your oyster. Gene, please give us your comment.
Thank you for the ideas, and I will do additional research, and I really appreciate it.
Very good, Gene. Once again, this is AC2GS with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any questions or comments or the technical net or has anything to say about the subject that we were just talking about, please hit the little press to talk button and give me your name and your call sign. By the way, Mitch, if you're still around, was the stream down earlier today? Because I couldn't quite connect to it, and I don't know if it was my end or the stream.
It was, it's RJ. I forgot to open up the firewall. Well, actually, I opened up the firewall to the IP address, but I forgot to make it a static IP, and I realized that I made the computer that the stream is on a static IP.
Okay, very good. I always open up live.kc2rc.com when I'm doing this little technical net, so I have two streams going just in case. But thanks a lot, Mitch. And once again, I just want to say that Bob was very nice in donating his FTM400DR. And he's just, like all of our members, very generous and very kind. And I know you appreciate it, and I certainly appreciate it as well.
Yes, that was a very nice thing he did. He's a very, 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 very nice guy.
Well, I was mentioning a little bit earlier that people have been very generous with the generator fund, and things are going gangbusters. With the early membership renewals, we now have 13 people who signed up for 2019. So, you know, it's the members that make the club, and we got some of the nicest members. And once again, this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra Roy with the Kings County Radio Club. Technical Net meets here every second and fourth Wednesday at 9 p.m. on KC2RC, and we're here to answer questions or discuss concepts that people want to bring up or listen to complaints and what have you. So if anyone out there has any technical questions or comments for the TechNet, please feel free to push that little push-to-talk button. In addition, we do have the TechNet puzzle for tonight, which hopefully we'll be talking at length about. But first, let's see if anyone has any actual questions or comments tonight.
N2HUH.
Good evening, N2HUH. How are you this fine, fine day in October?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Roy. And everybody sounds good on frequency. I was actually curious if anybody else was hearing the other repeater that I hear on this frequency. It's usually in between transmissions, so I didn't catch any call sign or any other information, but I can actually hear another repeater on this frequency. I was just curious if anybody else was hearing the same.
Personally, I haven't heard a great deal of other repeaters. On this particular frequency, I know it's not uncommon at least a few times a month to hear on Limar frequency. Usually it seems to be a Connecticut-based repeater. But let me ask anyone in general if they've noticed any foreign repeaters triggering their radios, or especially Malen, who's located not that far away from you, so maybe it's a Queens sort of thing. So anyone who's had that experience, please hit the push-to-talk button. Comment away.
I don't come to this net for months. I come one night, and I'm all over the place on your net. I'm sorry. But I do believe that the call of that repeater, and I believe it is in Connecticut, is N1NW, N1NW. And before my antennas came down, I noticed that I started to hear them, so they must have put an amplifier on their repeater, or it could just be conditions, but every now and again, I do get it. But my antennas have been down for the last couple of months, so I haven't been able to hear it for the last few months, so I kind of forgot about it. But it is, the call of the repeater is N1NW, in case you want to check out their website. Alpha Charlie 2 Alpha Echo. Back over to net control, and that's the last you'll hear of me tonight.
Thank you, Joe, and you're always welcome. We'd love to have your participation in this little technical net. It's the participants that really make the technical mark. So anytime you have anything to say, you feel free to say it. But thank you very much for that information. I'll look it up. I again don't really recall that often noticing breakthrough of Connecticut repeaters on our repeater frequencies. I have noticed it on others. At sometimes I thought that their repeater was malfunctioning because it would be at around 15 to 20 decibels lower than their usual output, and then I realized that there were a lot of one area call signs being thrown out, and there was something strange going on. But yeah, it's interesting how Connecticut kind of works its way into Brooklyn and Queens and such, given the chance.
Your repeater on Limewalk. I did actually communicate on that repeater. The one that's on the Limewalk frequency. I think it once when Limewalk was down, I communicated on that frequency, and of course once when they were off the air after midnight, I also communicated on that frequency, and I think once or twice I was able to hit it. I didn't see the purpose. I think I just threw out my call and I didn't get anything back, but I did hit the repeater. But on a, like I said, a couple of times I actually had a QSO on that frequency, so I thought that was interesting. All right, very good. Just wanted to know if anybody was hearing the repeater on this frequency that I'm hearing. I don't think I can hit it, though, but I can hear it.
Any comment?
Yes, please give us your comment.
Well, I'm not sure when Connecticut reached us, but I know Delaware, North Delaware reached us. They have 146.730, same frequency and PL as us. And I got a note from Bill W3DE. He's a trustee of the DARA Repeater Association, Delaware Repeater Association. And he sent me a note and told me that he heard us on his repeater, and he just wanted to wave the hand to us and towards you.
I'm glad he only wanted us to wave the hand at us. You know, it's surprising that the frequency allocation organizations didn't put everyone on different PL tone encoding, because that's kind of the point of PL tones, but okay. I guess 88.5 is a very popular PL tone.
Delaware, since there is no PL tones, if someone was on the radio, he would have had a conversation.
There's no law that you have to use PL tones. It's just usually what people do. You know, some repeaters have PL tone squelches in addition. Our club has. That's one of the ways that some people who have tone squelch can block the digital signal if their radio doesn't accept digital transmissions. Unfortunately, I understand Andy N2HUH's scanners don't have tone squelch capability, which is a shame, because it can be a little jarring to hear the digital signal come out unreconstructed. Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Question and Answer Net. Let's read the TechNet puzzle for today. The question is, the most likely detrimental effect of a strong radio frequency signal on a semiconductor junction within audio equipment is A, reverse biasing, B, open circuiting, C, rectification, and D, re-radiation of the signal. So those are the questions. It's on the website. It's easy to get to. You either look for the link on the front page, or you just type in puzzle.kc2rc.com, and that's our puzzle for tonight. But if anyone has any other questions or comments before we get to the technical puzzle, please feel free to press down on that little push-to-talk button and say your piece.
JVX.
Oh, Lloyd, good evening. How are you this fine, fine night?
Sorry for the late check-in. I was otherwise engaged, but, you know, apropos the repeater discussion, I think I mentioned this at the last meeting that I forgot the Berkshire, the Eastern Massachusetts or Berkshire Amateur Radio Association maintains repeaters on Mount Greylock, and Mount Greylock is like 3,500 feet, and it's truly at the summit, at which incidentally you can drive up there if you're ever in that region. It's spectacular. You don't have to hike, and you can drive right to the top of the mountain, and on a clear day, it's a fabulous view. You can see like five states, and there's a big tower up there, old like lighthouse kind of structure, and then near there are the repeater, the radio towers. Anyway, they run a whole host of transmitters up there. The full spectrum, in fact, and so. From my QTH upstate, I was able to hit it, which is about 70 miles away, on 50. They have a 50 meter link and a 50 megahertz, 6 meter link, and it operates just like a regular UHF VHF repeater, where you transmit input output differently, except the step is one. It's 1K. It's 1K, and there's a PL tone, so I made a contact, and then the guy that I contacted was like in Eastern Connecticut, who also was hitting that repeater. So it's quite conceivable that repeater could be hit from someone who's got a high antenna, like on the top of an apartment building. It's about 150 miles away, which would probably put it at the limit of FM. The UHF ground wave, but I think it's still possible to hit it, and it's just kind of neat. I'm just putting that out there. Back to net control.
Thank you very much, Lloyd. That's very interesting. The old saying about UHF and VHF are that there's three important aspects to getting out. It's height, and height. So the higher you can bring your radiator up for point-to-point communication, the farther that you can transmit your signal. I mean, I've heard people who had really high antennas up there and be able to talk a ridiculous number of miles away from the ones that we too tend to think of as reasonable. But if height makes might. So if you have a very, very tall place to plant an antenna and you're talking to another guy who has a very tall place to park his antenna, then you're going to get a good range out of that.
Yeah, that's affirmative. I'm in my apartment in Manhattan. I'm on the 16th floor, and my antenna's on a dresser, and I've had QSOs with people at WECA up in Valhalla, and they were 5'9". If anyone's interested in trying to work this the repeater in Great Mount Greylock, just Google Mount Greylock repeaters. So it's spelled GREYLOCK, and their webpage will come right up. And they have a great. It's very easy to read. You don't have to like dig to find their frequencies and tones. The height really makes a huge difference, and it's just kind of fun to experiment with that stuff. Back to you, K2JVX. Back to net control.
Indeed, experimentation is one of the high aspects of this lovely hobby. More people should get involved in that. You never know what you're going to find out. So try different things every so often. Don't allow yourself to fall into any kind of a rut. Unfortunately, I think I know a guy who's already on his 13th Baofeng, It strikes me as a little bit of a rut, but, you know, whatever floats one's boat. But always, you know, look across the horizon. See what might be coming your way. That's some suggestions down here in the Peanut Gallery. So this is AC2GS, Roy, with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. Does anyone have any technical questions or comments for the net tonight? Yes, Milan.
I just wanted to comment on the existing topic as I was listening. There's a few things I was thinking about. The first of which, there is actually a fourth factor in addition to the three that you mentioned, height, size, and height. And the fourth one is sporadic heat. Now, I'm not really much of a 6 meters and up kind of guy, but I do read what they post sometimes on Facebook. And from what I have read, this summer was one of the best in a very long time. Actually, they were saying the best in a very long time for sporadic heat. And there's been a lot of long-distance stuff on all kinds of bands throughout the summer. I'm not saying every day was like that, but that's the nature of sporadic heat. So this can also, you know, give you surprising contacts sometimes. And, of course, there's people who try to do that on single side bands, but occasionally we get that with repeaters as well. So this is one way this can happen from time to time. And my understanding is sporadic is strongest during the summer, and sometimes happens also during the winter as well. Let me think for a moment what was the other thing I wanted to mention. Forgot it already. I'm sorry. Back to you, Roy, from Kilo Golf to Charlie.
Perfectly fine. If you think of anything, feel free. Yeah, I was thinking of consistent things, you know, height being unchangeable. Sporadic ease is of interest and useful. Have you known anyone who plays around with tropospheric ducting, though?
Not anyone personally. I've read stuff on Facebook, usually in the digital modes groups, because I like FT8 and other digital modes, and sometimes people use them on 6 meters. For various stuff, because sometimes they bounce signals off planes or meteorite showers and stuff like that, or ground wave propagation, and then they take advantage of sporadic E and I guess tropospheric ducting as well. But no one really personally, just random stuff on the internet.
Most of the people that I know that are really, really active in tropospheric ducting, for some reason, are West Coast guys who tell me that they're able to talk to Hawaii sometimes, which is a heck of a propagation. Tropospheric duct is caused by a weather condition. I'm sure Howard, KD2MSU, could explain it much better than I, where there's a thermal inversion due to weather conditions that traps a refracting layer in the troposphere that extends the propagation of UHF and VHF over so many miles that people on the West Coast can actually talk to people in Hawaii without any kind of bouncing off of anything else. So it's a very, very interesting technology. I would think that it would be possible to do the same thing here for Europe, but I don't know of anyone who's actually done it or at least talks about it. So that's my 2 cents worth for tropospheric ducting. It's a rather intriguing technique to use. But you got to be lucky like anything. You can't predict it. It comes and then it goes, and you just have to be ready to jump on it.
K2JVX, yeah, you can get an app that alerts you when the conditions are suitable for tropospheric ducting and I think also sporadic E. So if you're a fanatic, you can drop everything else you're doing and then go to your rig.
Very good. So modern telecommunications has made amateur radio a little bit easier, as long as it doesn't annoy one's boss or you work for yourself. Yes, did someone have a comment? I just got someone who just pushed and there was a noise and then they unpushed.
I guess I was a little too fast, Doug. This is Kilo Golf to Charlie with a comment. In addition to those apps, some people who are into making VHF and up contacts, especially over great distances, they usually use the spotting networks that are used for HF contests. Those spotting networks, they're not just for HF. For example, I was watching, I think it was a week or two ago, when in Europe they had a VHF and up contest, and you could see, you know, 1 gigahertz or 10 gigahertz spots out there on, for example, GX Summit. I forgot what the extension was. I don't think it was just .com. Let me check. But yeah, gxsummit.fi. And it's mostly HF stuff, but whenever there's VHF and up stuff going on, you will see some spots there as well. Back to Netcom, Kilo Golf 2 Charlie.
Thank you very much, Glenn. I think as time goes on, thankfully, there's going to be more and more sources of reporting and spotting and beacons and reverse beacons and all kinds of fun stuff available to the amateur radio operator who doesn't dislike computers. I don't know about you guys, I still bump into the occasional guy who just doesn't like the idea of computers. In those famous words, it doesn't sound like amateur radio to them, and they don't even use it for maintaining their logs. But I think computers are a great tool, and I never turn down any tools myself. If they're useful, they're useful. But I'm glad to hear, Malen, of the other tools that are available. And again, I'm sure that as time goes on, the tools will get even better and better.
K2JVX.
Floyd.
Just as a friendly reminder to anyone who's listening about exotic FM stations or working FM, exotic FM propagation, that to open your squelch. You frequently forget to open your squelch, you don't hear anything. So you have to remember to open your squelch like you would if you were working a satellite. You have to open your squelch. And any kind of distant station, you have to open your squelch, and certainly tropospheric ducting sporadic E, you have to open the squelch. It's a minor thing, but something to put on a checklist.
The person who sent the digital stream, would you like to send an analog stream? I guess not. Maybe someone just pushed the wrong button. Once again, this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, and this is the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. If you have a question, if you have an answer, if you have a topic, if you have a comment, please feel free to hit that little push-to-talk button and say your piece. Just give me your call sign and your first name. I think that's Joe, KC2WTA. Can you boost your signal? You're about 90% noise at this point.
That's not me, Roy. This is Joe, KC2WTA, Staten Island.
I'm sorry, Joe. In the noise, I simply assumed it sounded like you. The person with a lot of noise, if you could either raise up your signal strength, or if your antenna is on a HT, move it a little bit around the room, a little something, get the signal a little bit stronger, the repeater. Please try again.
K9K, just checking in, supporting the net. Good evening.
Hey, Joe, WK9K, thank you for checking in. And welcome our Joe in Staten Island. We have a technical puzzle tonight. Have you read the technical puzzle tonight, Joe? WK9K, you're just kind of barely hitting the repeater. You're about 85-90% noise, unfortunately, so that's okay. Anyone have any questions or any comments to the technical net, or we'll just move to the puzzle, if that's the case? Okay, well, I guess we're off to the puzzle. Once again, it's not a difficult puzzle. It's not a tricky question. It says the most likely detrimental effect of a strong radio frequency signal on a semiconductor junction within audio equipment is choice A is reverse biasing, choice B is over-circuiting, choice C as in Charlie is rectification, and choice D as in Delta is re-radiation of the signal. So would anyone like to volunteer to push that little push-to-talk button and tell me if they think it's A, B, C, or D?
AC2, WTA.
Joe, what do you think?
I think it would be rectification.
Absolutely, positively correct, Joe. PN and NP junctions act as diodes. Diodes act as non-linear conducting devices, and we've all put together crystal radio sets. One of the radio set is that little 1N34 germanium diode that operated as a non-linear conductor, and those things mix frequencies together and generates all kinds of spurious noise. So the answer, as you said, was C, rectification, modulation.
Okay, Doc Royce, thank you.
Very good, Joe. Thank you for participating. I always look forward to you and your answers, because it's good to get a little bit of feedback and have some interaction for the puzzle questions. Once again, this is AC2GS, and I will ask if anyone else has any comments, questions, or statements to the technical net. If not, we'll draw it to a close, but it's up to you guys. If you have anything else that has come up in your head, please feel free to push that talk button and tell me about it.
Am I getting in, Roy? WA2CBL Mobile.
Andy, you're coming in fine.
Okay, yeah, the audio, this is the first time I heard this repeater. First time I'm hearing this repeater. The audio is up way too high. So I gotta look at that on the meter. And I'm in the car. I just want to say a quick hello. The repeater is not strong. I just happen to get a spot where I can hear it. And I'm about to go into the store. I'm leaving tomorrow for New Hampshire for Nearfest. I'll call you when I get up there. All right, so back to you.
Hey, very good, Andy. Enjoy, have a safe ride, and enjoy yourself at Nearfest. And yes, the repeater, the final amplifier failed and is being repaired. So that's why we're not putting out quite as many watts as we usually do. But that should be improving in the near future. But enjoy Nearfest and bring back some war stories from it.
Okay, we'll see how things go. Hopefully the weather will be nice. And we'll have a good time. All right, I'm going to move the car and I'm going to lose the repeater. So I'm probably getting into it better than I'm hearing it. So 73, and we'll talk to you next time, WA2CDL.
Okay, 73, Andy. We'll talk to you soon. So once again, this is AC2GS with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Question and Answer Session. And it's coming to a close, but before we close it up, roll it up, and slide it under the bed, anyone else have any questions, comments, statements, or anything to say tonight before we shut it up?
All right, this is WK9K. Good evening, Roy.
Hello again, Joe. You're sounding a little bit stronger, a little bit less noise than before, so you either brought up the power, or you moved the antenna a little bit. So whatever it was, it worked.
That's a copy. I did a couple of different things. I switched radios to my base radio, and I toggled between my 2-meter Yagi, and I just switched over to my dual band J pole. Before I was running a 2-watt HT with the Elk dual band Yagi, so I was toying around with that in my living room just to see if I can make it in. So I made it in, just to make it in with a strong enough signal. Back over to you.
Very good. So you learned something new. This is a much more readable signal. So although you can't break the squelch with the repeater from the other configuration, this is the much more preferable one, at least for my ears. So this is very good.
Absolutely. Trial and error, like anything else with this hobby. You know, just play around a bit, like you said earlier. Okay. This is WKNIK, back to that control.
Very good, Joe. So once again, before we shut it all down, anyone else have any questions, answers, comments, statements, or what have you for the technical net tonight? Okay, before I get to the closing spiel, I just want to thank Milan KG2C. He did a yeoman's job as my co-host for about a year and a half now, I think it's been. Milan is going to be traveling soon out of earshot of the repeater, and so he's relinquished temporarily his duties to the club, which we will miss him. Gene, KY2MY, was kind enough to offer his help in co-hosting from the next technical net on, and we look forward to him joining us, and I just want to thank Milan very much for the year and a half of hard work that he put into that, being my co-host here.
Very much, Roy. This is Milan Kilo Golf 2 Charlie. Well, I don't think any of it felt like work. It was a lot of fun talking to you guys, learning from you, and sometimes sharing what little I know and what I have tested, and I'm sure you guys will continue and do great while I'm away. I will listen to the recordings. It will not be practical to really listen to the net because of the 7 hours time difference. It will be the middle of the night for me. But I'll listen in, and I will use Echolink to get on the Weimark repeater from time to time. I've decided this is the most practical way to communicate with you guys. And maybe from time to time the Brandmeister link as well. But it will be probably mornings, New York time, when I show up. Kilo Golf 2 Charlie, back to Matt.
Very good. Thank you very much, Milan. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. The club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each month. Our meeting will be November 7th. We have a 7 to 8 o'clock pre-meeting for technical questions and answers, much like this net, and 8 o'clock is when the regular meeting begins. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on this repeater, as well as a 10-meter net every Sunday at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz upper sideband. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month at 9 p.m. We have a weekly net featuring Yaesu's Fusion Digital Technology every Thursday at 9 p.m. on our club repeater, KC2RC. If you can communicate using Fusion technology, please join in. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate. We do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. Keep in mind, once again, an application is available on our website, hint, hint, nudge, nudge. If you would like to contact the host of this TechNet, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this TechNet, amateur radio news, original articles, technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, 3 Alien Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen more, talk less. I'm time to roll this all up and shut this all down for now. But we'll be back to do it all over again on October 24th. And you're all welcome to join us. So thanks to all the people who participated tonight. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. This is AC2GS Roy going clear and getting the heck out of here. Until next time, guys, have a great time.